Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Γεια σας, ακούτε την BBC.
Están escuchando la BBC.
Λέω, λίγο είναι BBC, λέγα.
Vy slušajet BBC.
Εγώ είμαι BBC, εμνίδα.
Pozdravujem všetkých, ktorí počúvajú rádio BBC.
Yes, as those multilingual messages reveal, you're listening to the BBC. I'm Simon Calder, welcoming you to the second in our series here on the BBC World Service about people who speak many languages, the super linguists. A lot of us, I believe, would be thrilled to master just one different tongue, with all the benefits it could bring professionally and personally. So, in this programme, we confront the problem that deters many prospective linguists with busy lives and limited resources. How can you learn a different language, particularly as an adult? In the last programme, we heard that some people do appear to have a superpower for learning languages. I've been talking to many of these superlinguists, or polyglots, including professional linguist Ollie Richards. He speaks 8 languages fluently and can get by in many more. But he didn't get off to a flying start at school, and points to a study in a British newspaper, The Guardian, which highlighted shortcomings in language teaching.
8 out of 10... children who learn languages at school can do no more than understand simple sentences in the language. Despite years of study, there are similar longitudinal studies that have been done in Canada that show an extraordinarily low proficiency in the language, given the number of years that they've actually been in the school system.
Ollie Richards doesn't include his school years as part of the time he's been studying languages, even though he took French. Where do schools go wrong?
At school, at least when I was at school, all that happened was teaching to the test. And in order to pass those tests, there are things that have to be learned. That was essentially grammar and vocabulary. My homework used to be, here's a list of 10 words, go and memorise them. Having no idea what the pronunciation was, the purpose of which was to come back to school the next week and see how many I could get right in a test, never to be heard of again, those words. And similarly with grammar.
Ollie Richards' account sounds familiar to fellow superlinguist Richard Simcott.
Instead of using a piecemeal method where a child will learn about a certain topic, maybe the family, then they might go on to plans for the future. They might move on to the weather. They'll do a test and move on to the next subject. And I believe we need to bring this all together. These pieces, these bits of knowledge, actually form a whole, because you don't just stop when you said who you are. Then the conversation moves on.
I heard a great quote the other day from Chris Anderson from TED Talks, which was that knowledge can't be pushed into someone's brain. It can only be pulled into someone's brain.
That's Katie Harris, another polyglot who runs the joyoflanguages.com website. She too struggled with languages at school, where she was bottom of her German class, and at university, where she was almost kicked off her Italian course.
For me, that was the problem when I was trying to learn languages at school and at university. There was a system where it was essentially the teacher trying to push this knowledge of the language into my brain, and I wasn't really interested in it. It was a lot of learning grammar in isolation, learning words in isolation. That didn't work for me. I used to feel like it was me that was the problem, but now that I've managed to learn a few languages, I realise that actually I was doing maybe 10 minutes of listening a week, whereas now almost all of my time studying a language is focused on either listening or speaking.
If anecdotal evidence from people I meet in the UK is anything to go by, language learning in schools hasn't improved significantly since Katie's or Ollie's days. But some teachers believe schools can push languages into pupils' brains. I'm in a northwestern suburb of London, looking up at one of the world's great arenas, Wembley Stadium, which has welcomed all nationalities to events such as football's World Cup final and Live Aid, and next year will host the final of Euro 2020. But I'm here for a different kind of multinational experience at the Michaela Community School. an apparently ordinary place of learning in the shadow of the stadium. When it comes to language teaching, though, this school is highly unorthodox. I was invited to sit in on a French lesson for children aged 11 and 12. There was a strong emphasis on repeating the teacher's words, always on the cue of I say, you say. Teacher says, class repeats. These drills are intended to help the pupils remember more effectively and to make certain phrases second nature.
Subjunctive. I say, you say, subjunctive.
Subjunctive!
Okay, so we see it with bien que je sois all the time. You ready? Bien que je sois.
Bien que je sois.
The alphabet, too, is mastered by chanting. Michaela's school prides itself on strict discipline, and this is manifest in the French class with frequent commands such as 1, 2, 3, hands up, or in French, 1, 2, 3. They have been learning the language for just 4 months, but appeared capable of fairly complex phrases such as, I must go to the supermarket.
Il faut que j'aille au supermarché.
In this recently established school, the oldest year group is aged around 16. At lunchtime, I had the chance to speak to them, in French, that is.
Après être allé au stade, je suis allé au parc avec eux pour jouer au foot. Et franchement, c'était fantastique parce que je suis très sportive, en fait, oui.
Bon.
Pendant le week-end, je suis allé au cinéma. Oui. C'était fantastique parce que j'ai regardé un film d'horreur.
I learned French until age 16 in a more traditional school setting, and I was certainly not as fluent and had an accent that was not exactly Parisian. Michaela School's head of languages, French teacher Becky Storr, says these unorthodox methods are working wonders.
There are three fundamental differences. The first is that we really believe that the teacher should teach the pupils words and pupils shouldn't be left to kind of work it out for themselves, and teachers should also teach them how words are pronounced. It's very common in other schools for a pupil to read a word, new word that they've never seen before, and a teacher just say, ooh, what do you think it means? And they may not have any context in which to work that question out, and so it can be really, really overwhelming and demoralising. So we really believe in the teacher as the person who explains things, which seems like a very obvious thing to say, but it's sort of fallen out of fashion as an idea in this country in the last 20 years or so. Secondly, we really believe in the power of repetition. In other schools I've taught in, it might be very common for a pupil to be taught a word once, and then 2 weeks later this teacher says, oh, but remember, we taught you that 2 weeks ago. Why don't you remember? We are very aware of the fallibility of human memory, and we really don't believe that something has been learned until it's been remembered. We need to repeat it to them again and again, and they need to have a chance to repeat it in the classroom, in their homework, again in the classroom a week later, a month later, for that to really stick. And finally, we just really believe in the power of pronunciation. Not only is it this joyful thing that unlocks French as something which is so fun and which they can speak and sound like a real French person, but it also is such a psychological barrier later on in life when you go to France and you can kind of remember a bit of your French from school, but you think, oh, my accent's so terrible, I'm not going to speak any French.
In what way does the language teaching here at Michaela's school go against orthodoxy?
Well, in my experience of working in other schools, I found that the orthodoxy very much revolves around needing to engage the pupils through games and through pictures, other than actually using the language as something which is fascinating and fun in its own right. So where there have been lots of games, you find that the pupils end up focusing more on the rules of the game than they do on the French. Whereas what we do here kind of celebrates French, and we find that the pupils here are far, far more engaged in the language than any other I've taught, where I've tried to use games and pictures and other things to kind of trick them into thinking French is interesting. French is interesting in and of itself.
So I started at a young age with French at school.
Superlinguist Richard Simcott began his love affair with languages at school and rapidly broadened his linguistic horizons.
I had a stepmom from Thailand, so Thai language, Welsh was spoken quite a lot. At school, I had Spanish. I went on to get a degree from the university.
Richard now speaks literally dozens of languages. Yes, and good for him, you may think. He started as a child when accepted wisdom says it's easy to learn a language. I know plenty of adults who've tried to learn anything from Spanish to Mandarin but have given up after a few weeks, saying basically, I'm too old. But Richard says that attitude is defeatist.
People find it intimidating sometimes. They have a fallacy in their head that actually as an adult we can't do it, or children are better, and it's completely wrong. Adults can learn languages. I learnt the language that I speak at home now on a daily basis and have done for 14 years at the tender age of 27, and I think I manage quite well.
The key ingredient in that mix is that of time.
So everyone, lesson one. You're never too old. Ollie speaks 8 languages and is so convinced that anyone can learn, he set up a website called iwillteachyoualanguage.com and writes books to help and encourage learners.
If you were to take a 3-year-old and a 30-year-old and you were to give them an identical program of language learning, the 30-year-old would learn orders of magnitude faster than the 3-year-old. Because as adults, we have study skills, we're motivated, adults can learn faster than children. Now, the issue is that as an adult, one of the main things that we struggle with is time and environment. So if you want to learn Portuguese, you've got to have time. You've also got to have a Portuguese environment for you to actually practice. So that is a logistical problem. The huge advantage that kids have on their side is time. I mean, anyone who's watched a child grow up knows that it takes them years to even begin to master their first language. However, if they get a little bit of exposure every day, they will learn effortlessly. It just happens to take many, many years, while as an adult we could do it much faster.
So children learn because they're immersed in languages over many years, while adults have the advantage of speed. But language researcher Ev Fedorenko at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology says that young people are always going to have better accents. They have the added advantage of mastering grammar, the set of rules on which every language depends, without really thinking about it.
That's a question that concerns the so-called critical period of whether there is a time in one's life after which it becomes more difficult to master languages. So it does seem like there is such a time. There was just a recent study with a massive number of people suggesting that the age after which people can't seem to master certain aspects of language is around 16. And people agree that there is 2 things that are really hard to learn if you're not learning a language as a kid, and those are grammar and articulation, so pronouncing things in a way that would not have an accent. So it seems like we can keep learning words, no problem, but mastering grammar and pronunciation, articulation, seem like extra hard and seem to require this early exposure, early learning.
So if, like me, you've left the age of 16 and school language learning behind, you may not be able to get a native accent. But listen to professional linguist and author Alex Rawlins, who speaks many languages. Don't worry about sounding like a local, he says. In fact, it may be best if your accent gives you away as an outsider.
One of the big things is nuance and understanding how to be polite in certain situations, when saying please too much, when it's not enough. And that varies completely between culture and culture and really has nothing to do with language. It's just to do with etiquette. And if you walk into an environment with a perfect accent and, you know, perfect pronunciation, but are not saying the things that someone would expect you to say, then you will be perceived as rude.
So, lesson number 2 for today. Don't worry about your accent. Who knows? Some people may find it cute. Just give speaking a go. And, says Ollie Richards, don't obsess about grammar either.
Often people will place an inordinate amount of importance on learning grammar. They will study grammar till they're blue in the face, but it's really only a tiny fraction of communication in the language. Ultimately, your proficiency in a language, your ability to speak it and to communicate, comes from speaking it a lot. But often people don't really get that. And if they do get that, they don't necessarily know how to go about it.
Fortunately, 21st century technology helps to remove barriers, real or imagined, to language learning by allowing you plenty of practice. Katie Harris again.
Finding native speakers to practice online is actually quite simple. There are many platforms online where you can find people to do language exchanges with over Skype. For example, iTalki. But from what I've seen with people that have problems with this, it's getting over that barrier of, oh, I don't speak this language very well yet. I'm too scared to go and start speaking it with someone. So I think making peace with the fact that at the beginning it is going to be awkward, that makes it much easier to start speaking to people, I think.
Lesson 3. Allow yourself to be a beginner and don't worry about making mistakes, says superlinguist Richard Simcott, who's learnt literally dozens of languages.
I don't mind making a fool of myself. I don't mind getting things wrong. In fact, I see getting things wrong and admitting that you get things wrong and listening to correction and learning from those mistakes a strength.
Learning from mistakes is something that every superlinguist can tell a tale or two about. Alex Rawlings has plenty of what he calls war stories.
There have been so many times where I've got words confused and just been absolutely none the wiser. For example, when I was living in Hungary, I was ordering a coffee and the lady asked me, itfogyasztás, which is like, are you having it here? I wanted to say elviszem, which means I'm taking it away, but instead I said felviszem with an F, which means I'm taking it upstairs, which caused complete consternation to her. She's sort of looking around for this non-existent upstairs, wondering whether I was maybe flirting with her. 10 minutes later, I suddenly realised, like, oh, hang on a minute, fel means up and el means away, so I used completely the wrong preposition. But these, they're sort of like the war stories of a polyglot, the badges of honour of going into a place and really humiliating yourself, but learning to laugh about it, because ultimately it is funny, and then really learning from it, which means that I've never made that mistake ever again.
Živio.
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 And when they part, they would say, adio.
Adio.
At the 2018 Polyglot Conference, staged in the Slovenian capital Ljubljana, people who could already speak many languages were given the chance to learn another. I joined them for a one-hour course to learn instant Slovene.
Limonado, prosim.
Čekaj?
Ne, vala, račun, prosim.
Many people have the false impression about learning a language that it's like a performance. So, you know, you have to prepare for the performance at home on your own, memorise all of the words and all of the grammar, and then eventually when you're ready, you can step out and perform with native speakers. It doesn't work like that. You have to be prepared to feel a bit silly at first.
And in the spirit of not worrying about making a fool of myself, I decided to try out my newly learnt Slovene in a coffee shop in the beautiful old centre of Ljubljana.
So, hello, my name is Anna Mohar. I'm originally from Slovenia, from Ljubljana, so I'm a native in Slovene.
That's fantastic. I've done nearly an hour of Slovene study, pretty intensive just now, and so Anna has very kindly agreed to come out with me onto the streets of Ljubljana so that I can practice what I have learned.
Let's go.
Grimo. I think I would very much like a cup of coffee and maybe something to eat. And I know, because I've learned the words, that I could perhaps order a sandwich or a torta. Dobar den.
Dobar den.
Eno kavo sa melkom, prosim. Eno torto, gibanica.
There you go.
This feast has now arrived.
So now we would say dobar tek.
What would you say?
Dobar tek for the food.
Ah, bon appetit is.
Yeah, that's right. Dobar tek.
It is most definitely the best cake I've eaten all year, and I have been practicing. So. Great cake. And I managed to order the bill in Slovene too. I'm now all motivated to want to learn this language and maybe more.
So we're going today.
And so I went to an event in London which was thronging with keen learners, the Language Show, which claims to be Europe's largest language event. There, I met Corinne Abraham. She's a psycholinguist researching first and second language acquisition at the University of Edinburgh.
Everyone can learn a language. It all comes down to your motivation. If you aren't really motivated to learn something, you're not going to learn it. If I don't want to learn how to swim, well, I'm never going to get into a pool.
And is there a particular way that you would recommend your studying a couple of other languages? What's the secret of learning?
Well, I have had the really lucky opportunity to travel a lot. I lived in Japan for 2 years. I moved to Japan only being able to ask very basic questions. So after living in Japan for about 3 months and living in the countryside, I had to learn very quickly. So if you have the opportunity to move somewhere or even travel for like 6 weeks, immerse yourself in the culture, immerse yourself in the language, because then you'll have to use it. You will have to learn it.
So immersion is the key if you possibly can.
If you're lucky enough, definitely. But we're lucky that we live in such an easy international like world that you can find those communities at home. So if you can find a Spanish community, if you can find a Finnish community, any of those communities, they would love to teach you their language because that means you're also learning their culture.
Lesson 4. Language can do much more for you than simply enabling you to order coffee and cake at a Central European cafe. It can help you unlock a culture. Culture and language are inextricable. For example, Afrikaans, the language spoken by Dutch settlers in the rugged terrain of South Africa, has several words for hill which don't exist in the Netherlands, a relatively flat country. To comprehend a nation, you need to understand its culture, and that means learning a language. At the same event, I talked to Thomas Jays, who has the grueling job of an interpreter at the European Parliament.
To me, learning the language of another culture is the first step towards being able to understand that culture properly. And if you understand another culture properly, it's much more difficult to have conflict with that country. So for me, learning a language is bridging a gap. And I think that's something that we all need at all stages of our life. It's also something that just simply is enjoyable to do.
Time to sum up a few things we need to learn a language. Here's Alex Rawlings again.
I think the key to learning a language is that there are three parts that you need to have in place to be successful. The first is motivation, the second is resources, and the third is time. Your motivation needs to be very, very strong because you're taking on an activity that's going to go on for years and possibly your whole life. So love is an excellent reason to learn a language, but equally so is loving a certain filmmaker or an author, maybe just enjoying going to Italy and kind of wanting to be able to talk to people there, but just something that kind of connects with your heart. Resources, you need to identify perhaps a teacher that you get on with. Nowadays with the internet we can find so much online. But then finally time, and I think the key is not to overexert yourself, but actually to set very realistic commitments of maybe 15 minutes a day, half an hour a day. And if you keep that up, you will make an enormous amount of progress. But I think the key is that you'll really enjoy it. And if you really enjoy learning a language, then you will make progress with it.
So you have the motivation, you've allocated time and usually money to the task. Remember lesson number 3, you have to talk a lot. And to help you keep that up, here's lesson number 5. You need to find topics you're actually keen on. Katie Harris.
Language learning is a little bit like a code. If you don't really care about what's on the other side of the code, if you get an article in a textbook and you're trying to read it, but really you don't care what it says, it's going to be very difficult to have enough motivation to make the effort to crack that code and understand what it says. And I know that this can be a big problem for people because the big question is, how do I start reading and listening to things that I'm interested in when my level isn't high enough yet? And here this is where things like simplified books or simplified podcasts can be really useful that use the language in a natural way, but they're simplified for learners.
What if you've done quite a few hours of study, but you still feel you're getting nowhere? Could it be that you're simply no good at learning languages?
When people think this, it mostly comes from people underestimating the amount of time that it takes to learn a language. Often students will take a 45-hour course. They'll make some progress, but they're still really, really struggling. So they start to feel like maybe language learning isn't for them. Maybe they're not very good at language learning, but you know, native speakers spend 45 hours interacting with the language that they're learning over 2 or 3 or 4 days. It's important to have patience, I think. Don't think that just because you've done a 45-hour course and you're still struggling with it, don't think that it's you that's the problem.
And here's the 6th and last lesson for today. You need to be disciplined and have patience, maybe a lot of patience. Lidia Machova, polyglot and language mentor, has calculated how long it takes her to learn a new tongue with daily study.
I counted it. It takes me about 2 years to learn a language, but I take some breaks. So let's say a year and a half of learning, about 1 hour a day. That gets us to about 500 hours of work. And I asked other polyglots, like many of them told me a very similar number, but we're speaking about Europeans learning a European language. The number will definitely be higher if you learn an Asian language such as Chinese or Japanese. And of course, it depends on many things such as, is this your first Romance language or your first Slavic language? What are the languages you speak, etc. But if we want a very rough number, like if we're talking 50, 500 or 5,000, I would say 500.
So just 499 hours to go for my Slovene, or 498 if I count my coffee shop experience. In the next episode, we'll visit the multilingual countries of India and Luxembourg, where students don't just learn other languages at school, but are taught different subjects in different languages. Maths in French, history in German. You've been listening to The Superlinguists with me, Simon Calder. The programme was produced by Arlene Gregorius for BBC World Service Radio in association with the Open University. Are you looking to improve your language skills? Put your linguistic knowledge to the test and discover more about polyglots by heading to bbcworldservice.com/documentaries and follow the links to the Open University.
Thank you for listening. There will be more from the documentary podcast soon. The documentary is just one of our BBC World Service podcasts. There are many others to choose from.
That's me drinking millions of viruses.
Crowd Science is the podcast that takes your questions and turns them into audio adventures.
My question for Crowd Science is, why and when did humans first start cooking food?
It's all fun!
I'm Marnie Chesterton, and each week we put your questions to scientists working at the limits of human knowledge.
I want to know how cells, how do they know what to do?
They're yanking on their neighbours, they're pushing on their neighbours.
We also try and demonstrate exactly what they're telling us.
What are the limits of human endurance?
You've just run a marathon and been hit by a car. How are you?
That's Crowd Science from the BBC World Service.
So if you'd like to inject a bit more science into that,
just search for Crowd Science wherever you get your podcasts.
I knew it. Amazing.